Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, and welcome back to the Prospect Interview, where we meet some of the brightest minds of today and talk about the ideas that matter in politics, arts, and society. I'm Rebecca Liu, digital assistant at Prospect. This week, we talked to film director Sarah Gavron and writer Teresa Okoko about their new film, Rocks, which comes out in the UK this Friday. Rocks follows the story of a teenage girl named Shola, nicknamed Rocks, living in East London, and the lasting friendships she develops at school. Rox lives with her mum and little brother in a Hackney estate and comes home one day to find her mum gone. She's then left to figure out what to do next. Rox first premiered around film festivals across the globe last year, and it received high critical praise and excited audiences all over. I talked to Sarah and Teresa about the long collaborative process behind the film, what it was like working with a production team that was 75% female, and why it's so important to tell the story of teenage girls on their own terms.
Thank you, Sarah and Teresa, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So let's start with the story of Rocks. Teresa, how did you get the idea for it?
So I've been speaking to Eva Yates and Celine Coulson at Film 4 about dating my play Girls, and we wanted to talk about female friendship and relationships, and in that came up the fact that I had five sisters, which probably inspires my affinity towards stories about women and their relationships with one another. And I kind of was talking about my sisters, and particularly one of my sisters, Tracy, who I feel like I owe so much of my childhood to, so I kind of wanted to write her a thank you film. And so that's sort of where the inspiration for Rocks came from, wanting to basically acknowledge and thank so many black and brown girls like Tracy, who are so strong and so protective and sometimes appear hardened, but beneath that is this like well of joy and kindness and goodness that they preserve for those who don't necessarily have the capacity to be as strong as them, or who they just want to protect and allow them to not have to be as strong as them.
Mm. It's also kind of a love letter to East London and Hackney too. Does that come out of your own life, or was that a fictional gloss?
Hackney born and raised, still living, very proud. Yep.
And then Sarah, how did you come on as a director?
So, well, the team wanted to make a film about young people, and so we formed this creative team. Teresa's story, which she'd been developing before, she then brought to the team. And so, and we all responded, and then it kind of evolved into the film it is, because we went about it in a little bit of an untypical way, in that we set out to find the young girls who were going to play their parts before Teresa presented them with the narrative, and before her and Claire wrote it into a fully formed screenplay. So Lucy Pardee, who was a casting director who's done American Honey and Fish Tank, mm-hmm. and often worked with people who haven't acted before, first-time actors, went out into schools, and she worked with an associate called Jessica Straker, and they found lots of kind of amazing young women who wanted to come on our journey. And then we did workshops, which Teresa and Claire and me and an associate director, Anu Henrique, were in, and we all got to know these young people. And then Teresa presented this script, and it all sort of evolved. So it was so much of an evolution of building the film with the team and the young people.
Yeah, I really wanted to ask about that, because when watching it, so much of the dialogue, you know, it's a story about teenage girls, so much of the dialogue felt very natural. It didn't feel like older people writing in the way that they think teenagers should or do speak. So how was that kind of creative process of really getting into their lives?
Yeah, I think we spent so much time with the girls anyway before we actually started scripting. So we had their voices and then, like, you know, I'd like to say that we carried their magic with us. We were infected by it, and very fortunately so. I think it felt really easy to express that on paper. Also, my background is youth work as well. So while I was working on Rocks, I had been working in youth and community at Islington for years. And I question when I see people not write the voices of their characters effectively, because I don't think it's that hard. I feel like if you love your characters enough, you know them well. And also I think that speaks a lot to, like, authorship and ownership, and actually how we tell stories and who we allow to tell their own stories. And I think the joy of the collaboration of Rocks is that we, I hope, gave voice to all of those young women you see on screen, their communities and their families. And that's why I think it is, like, I hate the word, but, you know, it's used often, it is authentic, because those were really what the voices you see on screen and you hear are the voices who really poured into the film.
And then I wanted to also ask about how you portrayed the way technology and social media shapes the lives of these young women. I think I was really struck by it because it was the first time I'd watch something where it felt very natural and it didn't really, you know, feel like, oh, this high tech thing or this really soul destroying thing. It was very much embedded in the film in a very natural way.
Yeah, the phones are an extension of their arms these days, and they're like, me, not my job. But so, you know, in the workshops, they were always filming each other and referencing things on social media, and so it was very kind of organic. And then when we were on the shoot, you know, we were all there on set and they were filming bits. And so it felt like a sort of natural part of the storytelling. And then we kind of dumped some of their footage from their iPhones on the editor, Maya Maffioli. So she kind of wove that in, and then we all fed back. And so it kind of grew organically out of just the way they are, and that, you know, it was very natural.
Yeah. So how much had they bonded before the filming actually began? Because the friendship also just felt so real throughout the film.
Yeah, they were pretty close. And like I said, we'd at the point we started filming, had it been a year and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it'd been like around a year and a half. And it was, you know, particularly, I think the friendships you see on the screen, the reason why these, apart from the fact that they are like sublimely talented, but one of the reasons why these were the girls out of the 1500 girls that Lucy Pardee and Jessica Straker saw, the reason why these the girls ended up on screen was because their friendships and their bond and their dynamic was so undeniable. You couldn't sort of have one without the other. You couldn't separate them. They made each other electric. And I think Claire Wilson always says, you know, they pretty much chose themselves, and I think a lot of that was because of the bond that they had created that was such a joy to watch and be a part of. We kind of just wanted them around as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And then kind of moving from on screen to off screen, so we're speaking the morning after David Olusoga made a statement about the diversity problem in Britain's television industry, and Steve McQueen sort of said similar things this summer about film. And the point both of them make is that it's not enough to look at who's on camera. You also have to look at the production team behind it. So tell me a bit about the production team behind Rocks and how you secured that 75% female statistic and how that influenced how things were done on set.
Well, we really wanted it to feel coherent, and that the people behind the camera to be close to the stories and the girls, and there'd be a sense of sort of trust and that they felt they could contribute as well. And so it made sense to find a crew who were mostly female, mostly young, from different backgrounds that mirrored the girls in some cases. And that really contributed to the whole process on a number of levels. I mean, you've talked about mentoring, haven't you, Teresa? How we were all kind of learning from one another and able to look behind the camera. We wanted the girls to be able to look behind the camera and think, oh, one day I could maybe be a grip, or I could be a camera person, or I could be a producer, or I could be a writer. You know, there were all those role models on the sort of when I was growing up, you know, there just weren't, and I didn't know that you could be a director as a woman. I just had no idea. You have to sort of see it to be it. It was only in my 20s when I saw films directed by women. It was like an epiphany, you know, you could do it. So we wanted to, it worked for the film, it benefited us all, and we all wanted to learn from one another.
Yeah, and Bookie and Backray, the lead, also talks about how it made the experience easy and safe for her. Like, it wasn't this strange world, because we had obviously all been together for such a long period of time, all of these women, all of these people from all of these different backgrounds, often in Hackney and Islington, in places that were their homes or looked like their homes and their communities. And then to transfer that like special, magical, precious thing to a set that then was formal or surrounded with people who were so distant from them or who didn't necessarily understand their cultures, their language, their humour, their stories, would have probably been a bit jarring and probably made the whole process hard to translate, because what we really wanted to do was take the joy and the beauty of what we had in those rooms and make sure that the audiences could feel that. And I think had there been such a disconnect between what we was doing in development and rehearsal to what was then being done in production, I think it would have been really jarring, not just for the girls as first-time actors and young people, but also for the creatives, for, you know, for myself and for Sarah, who really were, and for Claire who and Anu, who were really trying to be protective of this thing that we had created. So, you know, and I think that's why you get such performances of like, where you look in the eyes of the girls on screen, you're like, that must have been such a cool moment of joy, because that is so hard to fake or to create. So it really was, you know, they talk about how sometimes they forgot the camera was rolling, or how they would say something funny and everybody would laugh, and so they wouldn't feel like they were separated or that they were like a spectacle. And I think, you know, we underestimate how important the value of that is, particularly when working with young people, how important it is for it to be safe and also for it to feel like, yes, you belong here, you are, this is your space and you should own this space and you're not an intruder or an outsider coming into something new.
And then how's the reception been? Because it kind of premiered last year to really a lot of praise. Then you've had to see through COVID. That's been a bit of a struggle, but do you feel like things have picked up again?
I mean, we were lucky that we got the experience of going to a couple of festivals, and the girls came with us. So we all went to Toronto, which was, you know, our first outing for the film officially, although we'd showed it to the families, which was a terrifying experience because we wanted them all, and the girls, we wanted them all to love it. But
did they like it?
And they loved it.
Oh, that's good.
That meant a lot, didn't it? But yeah, Teresa said she'd block them all if they didn't. But they did all love it. And that in a way meant the most to us. But then in Toronto, we got people from different communities, and, you know, there's a Somali community there, and some of them came, and that was really exciting. And, you know, you said lots of old grey women liked it, didn't they?
Yeah, that was surprising, but also not surprising for me, to be honest. So it's the reception was good then, and I think I've been surprised. And Anu and Claire are probably the biggest advocates of this film. They believe it's the best film ever made, so they haven't been so surprised. But I've been surprised that like people's momentum for it hasn't dulled. I thought people would be over it by now, but I go onto Twitter and it's, you know, people who saw it last year, you know, are messaging me saying, oh, I've watched the trailer again and I've cried again and I'm excited again and I can't wait to see it again, and this time to take more people. And you know, and I'm a strong believer in everything happening for a reason. And I do, like, you know, I do believe that hopefully it coming out later than we plan will be of a benefit to so many people. I think, you know, we've mentioned it before between us that after such a difficult year for so many people that has disproportionately affected Black and brown people, whether it be COVID or you know, or racism and injustice, it feels like hopefully what we can give now is a sort of a gift of being seen, of being valued, of being applauded and being lifted up. So we hope that the timing of this, though it's been delayed, we hope that actually it's perfect time.
And have you heard of any reactions from teenage girls who are just like, oh my God, this is my life?
Yeah, we've had a lot of that.
My friend sent me screenshots from UK Gossip TV, which is like probably young skewing, I don't know, what do you call it, like an Insta blog page. They have like a few hundred thousand followers, and she just sent me so many screenshots of so many girls saying, why am I crying? Oh my gosh, tagging each other saying we have to make this happen. And that just like really warmed my heart, because I'm usually in those, like in on those blogs, like sort of looking for gossip, and like, you know, sometimes like some of the comments can be quite controversial. So I was like, when I heard that it was on UK Gossip, I was like, I'm nervous, but the response had been like, well, it seems, I'm taking a break from social media at the moment, but it seems from the feedback I'm getting that this response has been unanimously warm and excited. So yeah, that's nice.
I showed the trailer just before lockdown at my daughter's local school, and it was so sweet because it was an assembly, and then they were all meant to go off for classes, and they all queued up to ask about how they could make a film like it. And in a way, and they, you know, lots of black and brown girls and identifying with it. And in a way, one of our hopes for it is that lots of those young girls who see it think they could tell their stories now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we'd have a much richer industry for it if all those stories were told. We want to see many more of them.
Mm. Something that I found really interesting about the credits is you usually do have quite a hierarchical organization, whereas yours, like all the names were together, the cast was listed alphabetically. Like it did seem to point to a different way of making a film.
Yeah, I mean, right from the outset, it was a collaboration. It was a collective endeavor. Everybody, you know, had a voice. So many people contributed. So it would have been disingenuous not to reflect that in the way it's promoted, in the way it's talked about, in that, you know, it really benefited from that and grew out of that collective. Mm.
Yeah, and finally, not to put too much of a dampener on everything, but with COVID-19, I think the crisis of the arts is really at the forefront of everyone's imaginations. How does that affect how you feel about the future of British film, and what can the ordinary listener do to really support more of these stories coming through?
I mean, I'm at the moment being optimistic. You know, it's a very hard time, and we've got to recognise that, and we've got to sort of grapple with it and do all the work we can do to support one another and support people coming through, and particularly the next generation and people who, you know, I passionately believe that people who haven't had access to the arts need access to the arts. Everybody needs to work hard to ensure that's the case and do their bit. But I also, you know, it's going to be difficult, but you also hope that in a way it's a time to reset and say, let's look at what we've been doing, let's change what we've been doing, let's reevaluate and make it better and set off on a more positive footing going forward and try and create access, preserve the best of what we've got, but also create new access and have new stories that reflect the rich world we live in.
No, I agree. I think from, you know, from conversations that I've had with, you know, commissioners and production companies and producers and filmmakers across the board, I think it's given a lot of people time to reflect and maybe to realise some of the things that weren't working, and maybe some of the, with the speed of everything happening, I think people had gotten into a pattern of, oh, let's just do this because this is just how we do things. Mm-hmm. But I think this time has caused people to realize, okay, well, if we can't do things how we did things and we still have to do things, then we have to maybe find different ways of doing things, and not just in practical and logistical ways, but also in like moral and ethical and creative ways as well. So I think it sort of wiped out that excuse as this is just how we've done things, and I think it sort of disempowered those who lazily use that as an excuse to continue to do things the ways that exclude so many people from this industry. So now that is not an excuse anymore, because you can't do things those way, because and we just aren't able to, so we're looking for better explanations. And so I think if people can't find those explanations, then they'll just start doing better things.
On a final note, I was just going to say films like Rocks, and then you've got the brilliant I May Destroy You. They've been doing so well, they've been received so well, that it feels difficult to say people aren't interested in these stories when you've got these successful examples.
Thank you. What we want though is for there to be many more, for people to say, okay, this opens the way for lots and lots of stories. There are so many stories out there.
So many.
Right, Sarah and Teresa, thank you so much for your time.
That's all from us. Thanks for joining us this week on the Prospect Interview. Rocks is out in cinemas this Friday. If you enjoyed our podcast, please do leave us a rating and review. It really does help. Goodbye, stay safe, and see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.